Okay, we begin here on the top of Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph, five lines down by the two dots. The Gemara here is about to embark on a sugya where it's unclear about what it is speaking about. This goes back to the introduction to this perek, whereby the term chazaka is used in two different ways in the Gemara. There's a chazaka, like we've been seeing throughout this perek, which is the establishment of ownership by living or utilizing the field or the house, whatever object it is that you purchased, and establishing your ownership by just being there for a certain amount of time, that would obviate the need for you to show a shtar. And that's what we've been speaking to about throughout this perek. There is also another chazaka, which we really bumped into in the Mishnayot in Kiddushin, and that is one of the ways in which you can be kone real property, that you can acquire real property, kesef, shtar, and chazaka. Those are ways that you can make a kinyan on property. The word chazaka over there doesn't mean chazaka in the sense that it's been used in this perek, but there chazaka means that you demonstrate ownership over the property. You go in there, you hold the property, you put up a fence, you break down a fence, you open up the lock. Whatever it is that you do to demonstrate ownership over the field, but that's a mechanism for kinyan. As opposed to the chazaka in our perek, which has been a chazaka l'ra'aya, as a proof to your ownership, but it is not the vehicle by which you acquire. You need to have a kinyan, you need to have a ta'ana, a claim to how you acquired the property, and then the chazaka just proves that point, or demonstrates the fact that you are the owner of the property, and that you don't have to show the way that you came into possession of it. This next piece in the Gemara is subject to that machloket rishonim as to whether it's referring to the chazaka that we know from the Mishnayot in Kiddushin, or is it the chazaka that we're speaking about in the perek over here. So the Rashbam learns, and we'll learn it first this way, that the chazaka that we're speaking about here is the chazaka from the Gemara in Kiddushin, which is that you're taking possession of the property, you're acquiring the property. This one acquired the trees, and this one acquired the property. And the way that the Rashbam explains it is an individual sold the property and trees to two different parties. So he sold the land to one party, and he sold the trees to the other party. And each one of them, in their own way, took possession of the property. One did a chazaka, a kinyan chazaka on the karka, and one did a kinyan chazaka on the trees. Amar Rav Zivid, zekana ilanot vezekana karka. Each one of them got what they acquired. This person got the trees, and this person got the land. So now Matki for Rav Papa questions this position of Rav Zvid, Imkain, ain't no the Balaninot Bakar Kokum. What you're saying is that the Balaninot doesn't have anything in the land. What does that mean, that he doesn't have anything in the land? Obviously, if he bought the trees, he gets the trees. The other party gets the land. So Lemalay Balakarka la Balalinot, if that is true, let the owner of the property say to the owner of the trees, Akor Ilancha Shkol Vizil, take out your trees and leave. This is my property. Your trees are in my property. They may be your trees, but it's my property. But if it is my property and you have no rights in the property, I want the trees out. Take them out and leave. Now the way the Rashbam explains it, and you can see this also in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he says, Shim im mit yabshim halalu. If these trees dry up, if these trees are done, then you don't have a right to replant or put in new trees. But what he's not saying, according to the Rabbeinu Gershom, according to the Rashbam over here, is that you have a right to pull the trees out immediately. So your right to keep the tree there is because he sold you the trees. So now that you have the trees there, once they dry up, you have no other value that's left to the land. You were sold the fruits, you were sold the production of these trees. So as long as these trees are producing, you have a right to keep them. As soon as they stop producing, you have no rights to keep the trees there, or you have no rights to replant trees in those locations. That's the way the Rashbam, the Rabbeinu Gershom learned. And so what Rav Papa is asking Rav Zvid is, based on your assessment here, you have karka ilanot. If you separate them completely and say that the balal ilanot gets no karka, then you're only giving him a limited asset. You're giving him a wasting asset in a sense, because as these trees die or as these trees stop producing, he has no replacement for those assets because he got nothing in the karka. And the Balei Tosafot over here say that they think that he means akor ilancha, immediately. Take it out of here right away. I don't want your trees anymore in my land. And that's really Rav Papa's question, because the truth is that the way that the question is phrased according to the Rashbam and according to the Rabbeinu Gershom, that is Rav Zvid's position. Rav Zvid does believe that you have a right to keep the trees here for now and then not replace them or replant them later. So when Rav Papa asked that question, Rav Zvid would answer, yes, that's right. So that's why the Balei Tosafot say that the question of Rav Papa must have been something that's more extreme, or something that Rav Zvid would not be comfortable with, which is the fact that you would have to take out the trees immediately. So that's a difference in the view as to what's taking place in the question of Rav Papa. Elohama Rav Papa, so Rav Papa offers an alternative. Zekana ilanot v'chatzi karka, v'zekana chatzi karka. This one gets the trees and half the property, and this one gets the trees and half the property. So now, in terms of half the property, Rashbam over here brings two possibilities as to what it means here, chatzi karka. The first one is, lav davka chatzi karka. Doesn't literally mean that you get half the land, but rather, you get hazarich le'ilanot. You get that which is relevant to the trees, which means the area that is under the trees, ubenehem, the area that's between the trees, v'chutz lehem kamloa rabisalo. And the area around that, that is the amount of the individual who is picking and has his baskets there to pick, meaning that you get a certain percentage of the land that is associated with the trees. And we'll see later on in the Masechta that there are Mishnayot as to, depending on how many trees are in the land that you bought, how much land you get. If you buy one tree or two trees, you do not get rights to the property. You buy three trees, you get a tract of land that connects those three trees together, so you'll get excess land in that case. So what Rav Papa is suggesting is that the individual has a right not only to the trees, but he has a right to the land that is associated with the trees. In that case, what he is in essence saying is that this individual granted to two parties an acquisition in the land. And what one party basically says to the other party is, just like he gave you the rights to the land on a permanent basis, he gave me the rights to the trees on a permanent basis. The only way to get rights to a tree on a permanent basis is to have the ability or the right to replant the trees or to get the land that is associated with the trees. And so therefore what Rav Papa says is that the nature of the kinyan over here is got to be similar. So if your kinyan karka allows you a permanent hold on the land, then my kinyan on the tree has got to allow me a permanent hold on the tree. Or you could phrase it from the perspective of the seller. If the seller was generous to you as the bala karka, then he was also generous to me as the bala ilanot. So the same way that you feel that you're entitled to the entire tract of land here because he granted it to you, I should also have rights because he granted me the ilanot at the same time. Rav Papa says he gets karka. It's a question of how much karka he gets. Okay. According to the first pshat in the Rashbam, the amount of karka you get is associated or to with the trees. Inami, the other possibility is davka kamar chetzi. He definitely gets half the property. Kugon, shkola karka tzarich le'ilanot. If the entire tract of land is relevant to the trees, and therefore he gets half the land and the other party gets half the land, because here it's almost the reverse. The land comes with the trees because the trees need the land. The party who got the land has to get something. So since he has to get something, he has to get half the karka, even though the karka is relevant to all the trees. And here the Rashbam says, "Vafilu lahavu elo bet ilanot." This is true even if there are only two trees over there. So he quotes again from the Mishnayot later on, which we're going to see in Mocharet Asvina, that when it comes to one tree or two trees, you do not get rights to the property. But in a case where you have three trees, you do get rights to the property. And what the Rashbam is noting over here is that even in the case of two trees, in this instance, you will get karka, you will get the land. And that's for one of the two reasons that I stated before. Either that the seller, when he sold to you generously, he sold to me generously in the same way. Or just like the person sold to you a permanent asset, he sold to me a permanent asset. So that is the view of Rav Papa. So Rav Papa says that each one of them gets rights, but the rights have to be of an equal nature. On the other hand, Rav Zvid believes that that when he sold the property, that's exactly what he did. He sold the property to one party. He sold the trees to the other party, and the two shall never meet. Meaning that the person who owns the trees doesn't have any rights to the karka, and the person with the karka doesn't have any rights to the trees. Or in essence, what he's going to say to the bala karka is, he sold me the land without the trees. I have no rights to the trees. I have no rights to whatever you got. So same thing to you. You got the trees. You have no rights to what I got. They're totally separate transactions, and no party has rights to the other party. Okay, in that case, according to Rav Zvi, it seems that the owner of the trees will have a right to leave the trees there as long as they are still growing. We're not going to force you to uproot the trees immediately. And the question of a papa, that you should uproot the trees immediately, that was the question on Rav Zvi's position. If you are right that they're totally separate, then there should be no rights to the land. You should have no rights to keep the trees there. That's according to the Balei Tosafot. Because according to the Rashbam and the Rabbeinu Gershom, the question was, once they dry out, can I replant them? And the answer is no. And the truth is, that's Rav Zvi's position. You got the trees as long as they're here. Once they dry out, once they're done, you don't have any right of replacement. But you don't have a right to kick him out of the land right away and say that you can't keep your trees here because he sold them the trees. He obviously sold them the trees as they are or in their current state. He didn't sell them the trees to rip them out of the karka. And so for that reason, Rav Zvid believes that you divide up this completely. One guy gets the karka, one guy gets the trees. According to Rav Papa, there's overlap between the kinyanim, mostly in favor of the person who owns the trees, which is that he also gets some karka along with his trees. This is all according to the Rashbam and most of the Rishonim that explain this Gemara as having to do with a chazaka being a kinyan. Had these two individuals were given a kinyan chazaka in the land, question is, what were they given a kinyan of? And so there's being described here, the machlok between Rav Zvid and Rav Papa. The Balei HaTosafot question that understanding for two reasons. First of all, if you're speaking about kinyan, why is the Gemara here favoring a kinyan chazaka over kesef shtar and chazaka? You have kesef shtar and chazaka, why is the Gemara focused on a kinyan chazaka and not the other forms of kinyanim for real property? Number one. Number two is the fact that what is this doing here in the middle of our Gemara? Why is this relevant to our Gemara if you're talking about a chazaka of acquisition when the entire perek, all that came before it, and everything that's going to come afterward deals with a chazaka of raya, of proving that you are the owner of the property, but not a chazaka that is a kinyan. Therefore, the Balei HaTosafot over here believe that this Gemara is consistent with the rest of the perek, and the chazaka that we're speaking about here is a cheskat raya. It's about establishing ownership on the property, or in essence, two individuals came along, and they're both making claims over here. One says, I established ownership 3 years with the karka, and the other one says, I established ownership for 3 years through the trees. Maybe that might be the question. When he established ownership of the trees, what rights does that give him when he established that ownership of the trees? Does it simply give him rights to the trees, or gives him right to the trees with the land? That would be the machlok between Rav Zvid and Rav Papa, as to the chazaka's power to grant you rights over here. Whereas the bala karka only gets it the land. Obviously, he's not going to get the trees because there's a competing interest for the trees. And that's the way the Balei Tosafot learn over here, that the whole question is a question of people bringing ra'ayot but not taking possession of it. There are Rishonim that point out that the situation, the circumstance here could be a case where two parties are competing for property that's hefker. For instance, property of the ger, when he passes away, and by definition leaves no yorshim, unless he had children after he converted, so all the relatives that he had prior to his conversion are now ex-relatives because he's ketinok shenolad dami, and therefore he has no relationships to inherit the property or the ownership that he has. That's why it becomes hefker and first come, first serve to take the property. So that is why they use chazaka and not kesef and shtar, because kesef and shtar are only mechanisms of kinyan when there's a counterparty. You can't purchase something when it's hefker. You can't have a shtar about something when it's hefker. The only time you can have kesef and shtar is when there's a counterparty. So the situation here is a situation where they're acquiring from hefker, from the property of a ger, doing it in some way where there's no counterparty to the transaction. And that's why the Gemara focused on chazaka as being the means of acquisition. And that would explain the Rashbam's position as to why we're speaking about a chazaka here, not kesef and shtar, it still doesn't exactly help you with the understanding of why it's here in the middle of our perek, when it really is relevant to other parts of this Masechta, or even back in the Gemara in Kiddushin. But you could then stretch to say that the next Gemara connects to this Gemara somewhat. All right, Pshita. The next Gemara is clearly speaking about a case of acquisition and not a case of Raya. Gemara says it's pretty straightforward. Machar karka v'shiar ilanot. Lefanav yesh lo karka. If he sold the land and left the trees on the land, meaning that he sold the karka to a third party and he kept the trees for himself, it's clear here that he gets a karka or he gets value. V'afilu l'Rabbi Akiva. This is even according to Rabbi Akiva. Gemara is going to explain this in a second. But Rabbi Akiva is going to appear later on in our Masechta. The Amar, Mocher Ba'ain Yafeh Mocher. When a person sells, he sells in the most generous manner possible. Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim argue about a seller's intent. Rabbi Akiva says that a seller sells in the most generous manner possible. The Chachamim believe that a seller sells in the most miserly manner possible. And this Machloket will play out later on in the Masechta in a number of instances. In the cases of sales, what did he sell? Did he just sell the land? Did he just sell the house? Or did he sell the other items that came along with them? That is the machloka between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim as to how generous you are when you sell. So the Gemara here says that even according to Rabbi Akiva, who says that generally you sell in a generous manner, that would mean in this case where you sold the land and kept the trees for yourself, that you would have sold all the land and not left anything for yourself. Nevertheless, there's a difference. Because that is hani mile gabe bor vidot. That's true when you're talking about a cistern or you're talking about some sort of binyan in the ground. Delo mikachashu ba'ara. Because they don't cause any detriment to the land. So here is a case that is brought up later on in the Masechta in which a person sells a house or he sells a property. In that property is a bor and a dot. And he maintains the bor or dot for himself. Does he leave himself access rights? Does he leave himself the ability to get to those items? Rabbi Akiva says when he sold it, he sold everything, and all he kept was the boor and the dot. He didn't keep the access rights to the boor and the dot. That's Rabbi Akiva's opinion. The Chachamim believe that when he sells in a miserly fashion. It means that he left himself access rights to the objects that he kept. So in this instance, Rabbi Akiva would say you have to go buy yourself access rights if the person denies them to you. Whereas the Chachamim believe that you kept those access rights, and therefore you have a right to access them because you didn't sell that access. So that's Machlokes, Rabbi Akiva, and the Chachamim. Now, given that, in this situation, Rabbi Akiva would seemingly believe when you sold the land, you sold everything and didn't keep any land that is beneath the trees. The Gemara says that's not true. Even Rabbi Akiva here will agree that the land is not sold to the buyer of the land, but is retained by the owner of the trees, and that's because of the nature of these different things. One is that the boar and the dot, lo machshu ba'ara, they do not weaken the land, what the Rabbeinu Gershom says over here, because mishum hachi machalo afil et haderech, de lo machshu ba'ara, de yechol izroa samuch labor b'ladot. You can plant all the way up directly to where those items are located. Aval ilanot, when it comes to trees, de machshu ba'ara, they do weaken the land. In the simplest sense, machkesheara, it's just because they draw their sustenance from the land. That they are dependent on the land for their sustenance. But if you look here, you can see in the Rabbeinu Gershom and the Rashbam that they add other dimensions to this idea of machkesheara. Meaning that the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom continuing in his position, the machkesheara sheshurashim ve'en yachol izratach dehem. Since the trees affect the land itself, for instance, you can't plant under the shade that they cast. It blocks the rain, it blocks the sunlight, it causes problems for things that are planted near it. Therefore, you definitely left yourself the land that surrounds these ilanot, these trees. That's the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom explains it. The Rashbam says it slightly differently, and he says that when it comes to the boar and the dot, over there, there's no damage that's done by them. They are local issues, meaning that where the water is kept, or where that in-ground structure is of the dot, they are there, but they don't affect their surroundings, as opposed to the tree that affects its surroundings because The roots of the tree that grow away from the tree block the ability to plow that area, and they also possibly undermine anything that's near them. For that reason, the Rashbam indicates the person has in mind to keep the property around the trees, because he's afraid if he sold the property owner is not going to grant him the rights that he needs to keep his tree there. In order to keep his tree there, he needs the area around the tree to allow the roots to grow, not to cut them out to allow his plow to go through. He needs them to be there and not have him chop them down to plant something else there. Given that he realizes that if he doesn't keep for himself those rights, the other party could then hurt his position in the tree, he maintains a certain amount of property around the tree. On the other hand, by the boar and the dote, where they don't affect their surroundings, either for the reason they're Beinu Gershom or for the reasons of the Rashbam, there he doesn't think about keeping access rights because he believes the other guy is not going to bother him about keeping the item there. He'll let him keep it there because it doesn't hurt him in any way. And therefore he won't impede his access to the item because it's not hurting him or it's not bothering him to have it there. The tree, which is detrimental to his land ownership, if he gave up all the land around it, then the landowner would say, no, I'm not giving you rights to get there. I'm not going to allow you to keep it here even because it's ruining my land. So for that reason, when he sells the trees, he maintains the land around them. When he sells the other items, according to Rabbi Akiva, at least he sells all the area around them, or he doesn't maintain any rights here. So what the Gemara says is that a person who sells land and keeps the trees for himself will, of course, keep the land around the trees, because he knows that the trees cause problems. And since the trees cause problems, if he sold all the landowner would then come back and demand that he remove the trees or ruin the tree by making the land usable for him around it. So for that reason, he definitely maintains the land, even according to Rabbi Akiva. De'ilo shir, because if he did not leave himself that land, lema lei, he could say to him, akor ilanech, Vizil, uproot your tree and take it off of here. Once again here, the Rashbam says, Yishevesh Ailan. When the Ailan dries out, he'll tell him to take it out. In essence, he'll be left with a wasting asset. But he keeps the tree, he will only have the trees as long as they're there. As soon as they dry up or they're used up, he won't be able to replant trees. The Bali Tosafot, you can see this, Perish, the Yishevesh, Ubalav Taima de Machashiara. Again here, it's once they dry up, and has nothing to do with them weakening the land. Meaning that if he doesn't leave himself at this point, it has nothing to do with the tree's effect on the land. It simply has to do with the fact that if he gave him all the karka, once he's lost the rights to the trees, he has no rights to replant them. The karka's gone, and now he has nothing to do over there. He has no rights to do anything over there. Independent of the machashe karka of alilanot, when it comes to trees, the mekachashe ba'aro, they do weaken the land. Says, take your tree out of here. You have no rights to keep your tree in here. It's my land. Take the tree out. And he means to take the tree out immediately. Because the owner is going to want to plant in the area where the tree was. Or he's going to want him to remove the tree from the land. And therefore, it's not going to have any rights there. He's going to be left with nothing. So for that reason, the Gemara is clear in a case where a person sold the land rights, but maintained the tree rights, that he maintained for himself land rights as well. That's both the Rabbi Kiva and the Rabbanan. But, Machari Lanot, he sold the trees, Vishier Karka Lefanav, and he kept the property for himself. That is the Plukta, the Rabbi Kiva Rabbanan. That's subject to this Machloket, the Rabbi Kiva and the Rabbanan. Because over here, he maintained the land rights. He sold the trees. How did he sell the trees? Did he sell the trees in a generous manner? Or did he sell the trees in a miserly manner? That's the machloket Rabbi Kiva and the Rabbanan. And so over here, there's no reason for him to maintain the property necessarily under the trees because he has the rest or the remainder of the property. So the question is, did he give up property or did he not give up property in the sale? Li Rabbi Akiva damar mocher ba'ein yafeh mocher. According to Rabbi Kiva, who says when a person sells, he sells in the most generous manner, itlay, then you have property, because he sold in a generous manner. That means when he sold you the trees, he granted you the property rights as well. The Rabbanan, lately, according to the Rabbanan, you do not have property rights, because you sell in a miserly fashion, you sold them the trees, and that's it, no more than that. The Rabbi Kiva, itlay, Rabbi Kiva says you get the land, Va'afilu l'Rav Zvid. Even according to Rav Zvid from the previous Gemara, Damar Einlo, that he says that he has no rights over here. Hani Milei Gabe Shnei Lukuchot. That's when you're talking about two purchasers of the land. Damar Lei Kiyeke Dilidi, late lay beyond the note. Lididach Nami Leit Lecha Bekarka. Just like he says, you say to me, I have no rights in the trees. I say to you, you have no rights in the land. Because we were both sold the property. Since we were both sold items over here, we were granted equal rights in the items that we sold. Just like when he sold you the trees, he didn't give me any rights in the trees. So when he sold me the karka, he didn't give you any rights in the karka. That's how we expressed it or articulated it before. That Bala Karka sees himself getting the same rights that the Bala Inanot got, which is exclusive rights to whatever was sold to them. Avahocha, over here, Mocher, Ba'in Yafeh Mocher. Over here, there's a difference because there's only one buyer over here and there's a seller. The question is, what's the mindset of the seller? And according to Rabbi Akiva, the seller has a positive disposition or mindset, a generous way of selling, and therefore he sold them the karka. So even according to Rav Zvid over here, you would be entitled to the karka. L'Rabbanan, lately, according to Rabbanan, you don't get the karka. V'afilu l'Rabbapa. Even according to Rabbapa's position before, Damar Yeshlo, that he says that you do have rights to karka when you're sold the ilanot. Hane mele gabe shnei lukuchot. That's only true by two purchasers. Damale. Keiche de lidach zavin ba'an yofeh. Just like by you, he sold to you in the most generous manner. Lididi nami zavin ba'an yofeh. So too, to me, he sold in the most generous manner. So just like when he sold to you in a generous manner, it meant that you had a permanent hold or ownership on the property. So too, I was granted a permanent hold or ownership over the trees, which means I must have the land that's below them in order to replace them and to keep them there forever. Over here, there's no comparison or contrast between two parties that were sold to, but rather simply a single seller. In that seller, we have to gauge what's the intent of that seller. And the Rabbanan believe a seller sells in a miserly fashion. So in that way, you have here, first of all, according to the Rashbam and others who explain that the Gemara here is speaking about the chazakah of acquisition, then this Gemara is clearly a continuation of the previous Gemara, which is Rav Zvid and Rav Papa were arguing about acquiring the property. And then the Gemara lays out over here, when you have this acquiring of a property where someone sold a portion to someone else and kept a portion for themselves, that has a different din than the case where it was sold to two parties. Because when it's sold to two parties, you contrast the parties, or you compare the parties, and that might give you different rights, depending if you're Rav Zvid or Rav Papa. Over here, it's all dependent on the seller, because there's only one buyer, and the seller's intent, or the seller's disposition, will determine what was given over here. And that's the nature of the connection between the two sugyot. According to the Bali Tosafot, to say the previous sugya is speaking about a chazokah, which means literally a chezkat raya, like we've been speaking about the rest of the parak. How does the Gemara jump from the Rav Zvid and Rav Papa over there into our case? Why are the two cases related at all? Over there we were talking about establishing a chazakah on the property or on the ilanot, and now all of a sudden here we're talking about if a person sells a property and the question of the ownership that is associated with the sale, why does it have to do with chezkat raya? So the Bali Tosafot explain over near the read, Dari b'chezkat gimel shanim, v'minash ma'inan b'samuch. And what we use from this in close by, meaning the proof of this sugi that we just read, is the macha lezeh lenot lezeh karka, v'lerab zvid ein lebali lenot b'karka klum, lita acherim bim koman. That you have no rights to put anything else in there, klishi yavshu, when they dry up. Ulera papa yeshlo, desvaruhu. It's logical. Di machar lezeh lenot lezeh karka, bistam kana bali lenot karka, lita acherim bim koman, lishi yashvu. Gam chezkato yeshlo, loho il le'inyan zeh. And so what he says is that the connection between the two items is that if a person is going to sell property to another party or sell the ilanot to the other party and we're questioning whether he gets the karka or not, that same question relates to our situation as well. When you're trying to establish a chazakah here, what are you establishing a chazakah for? That was what you were asking before, David, that the chazakah that you're establishing, does it establish a chazakah just for the karka? Does it establish a chazakah for the ilanot only, or for the ilanot and the karka? That will be determined by what normally comes with the trees. So your establishment of a chazakah over here will be determined by the next sugya. The next sugya says, does land normally come with the trees? Or does land not normally come with the trees? That impacts on your view as to what you're establishing a chazakah for. And so that's what the Bali Tosafot says, is the connection between the two sugyot, which is once you determine what normally belongs to an owner of the trees, then you can say when a person takes a chazakah on the trees, did they make a chazakah just on the trees, or did they make a chazakah on the trees plus the land that is associated with them? So that's how Tosafot connects between the two sugyot. Just to make it a drop more complex, the Gemara over here said that he has rights to land when the person or the individual sold him the ilanot. Rabbi Akiva says he has rights to the land. The Chachamim say he does not have rights to the land. The problem is that this is an explicit Mishnah Gemara later on in a Mocherta Sfina, that it depends on the number of trees that were sold. We've mentioned this again before, that if you sell one or two trees, you get the trees without the land. You sell three trees, you get the trees with the land. So why over here all of a sudden is the Gemara discussing, independent of that, whether you get the land or you don't get the land? Let's see how many trees he sold them. They sell him one or two trees, doesn't get land. Sold him three trees, he gets land. Why is this even a discussion over here? So therefore you'll see now that the Rashbam claims that the sugya here is talking about shnei ilanot. It's talking about two trees. It's talking about a case where he sold him two trees. So normally, based on the sugya later on, you would not be entitled to the land at all. Because if you had three trees, you for sure would get land and there'd be no discussion here. Both the Chachamim and Rabbi Akiva would agree that you get land in that instance. The question in our sugya is in two ilanot, where you have two trees that are here, do we say that the owner, when he sold you the trees, that he also sold you the land along with the trees? And that is because that is the machloket that exists between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, which is that, yes, by the case of three trees, everybody agrees you get land. But what the Rashbam is indicating is that later on in the sugya, when it says two trees, you don't get land, that's only the shita of the Chachamim. The shita of Rabbi Akiva is, even with two trees, you will get land, because the mocher is mocher be'ayin yafeh. And so that's the way that the Rashbam learns it, is that Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim are in agreement when you have three trees that you get land. When you have two trees, even though the Gemara seems to indicate that the Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Akiva, what the Rashbam points out is that's only true with regards to that piece of the Mishnah that says three trees get land. But the ratio of the Mishnah that says by two trees you don't get land, that is not authored by Rabbi Akiva, and that is borne out by our sugi over here. Rabbi Akiva says you get land no matter what, because it depends on the seller's disposition, which is generous. On the other hand, the Chachamim believe it depends. If you have three trees, you get land. Two trees, you don't get land. That's the way the Rashbam explains the sugya. And of course, the Bali Tosafot disagree over here. He says, "Ve'en nira l'ri." He says that's not the way that the sugya later on reads. And therefore, the Ri believes over here that kana gimel kana karka is even according to Rabbi Akiva. So that means that according to that Rabbi Akiva, when you have two trees, you also don't get karka. So now you have a bigger problem. According to the Ri, when you have three, you get karka. When you have two, you don't get karka. So now you can't explain this sugya over here with two trees, because even Rabbi Akiva agrees by two trees that you don't get karka. So how are you going to explain our sugya over here? So he says you can explain the sugya over here in a case, the gimel ilanot. You have three trees. If you have three trees, then what's the understanding of the Chachamim's position? You have three trees, you get land. So now I understand why Rabbi Akiva says you get the land. According to the Chachamim, why don't you get the land when there are three trees that are there? So he says, even though normally when you have three trees, you get the land, shiny ocha. Here it's different. There's only enough land there to be utilized for what normally would be given to the trees. In a normal circumstance, these three trees would garner all the land that is there. Now we have a problem, because the individual just said, I left myself land. He said, I sold you the trees, and I left myself the land. How do we interpret the statement that he says that I left myself the land? Since he defined it and said that I am keeping land, we are going to override the normal protocol here, which says that when you sell three trees, you sell the land with it, because otherwise the statement that he made that I left myself some karka is meaningless in that case. So that's why the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Akiva in this instance. Or he says, v'sadeh gedola, that he has a large tract or large field. And there he says that I'm leaving all the property for myself. So in one of two circumstances, the Chachamim are going to disagree. When you have three trees, you get the land. Over here, there's an exception, either because all the land would belong to the trees then, and he says, I'm giving you the trees, I'm keeping the land. So we want to make sense of what he said with, I'm keeping the land. The only way to do that is to take the land away from the Balal Ilanot, or in a large Sedeh, where he says, I'm giving you the Ilanot, and all the land remains for me. He said, all the land. So the explanation of all the land means all the land. And I'm not giving you any land that's associated with the trees in a normal fashion. So that is, Lokuliyama, Lokona Bekufa Karka Klum, in the Karka you have no rights. Even Rabbi Akiva is going to agree that you have no rights as a Bali Ilan in the Karka. The only question is, when it dries out later on, you have a right to replant in the land. So the machloket, according to the Bali Tosafot, according to the Ri, is three trees normally garner you land. Over here, too, he got three trees. He should be given the land that goes associated with it. The problem is that we have a mitigating factor over here. The mitigating factor is that he said, I'm leaving myself the land, or I'm leaving myself all the land, whichever expression that he used, which seems to indicate that he didn't give you the land that's associated with the trees. So everybody agrees that because of that statement, you have no rights here. The land belongs to the original owner, because he articulated the fact that you're not getting any land. The machloket here between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim is, once these trees dry out, do I have a right to replant the trees or not replant the trees? The Chachamim say, you said, I'm keeping the land. I'm keeping all the land. That means literally, you keeping the land. The trees die. The land remains mine. Bye-bye. You have no rights here. Rabbi Akiva says, when a seller sells, he sells in a generous manner. The generous manner that he sells is, yes, I'm keeping all the karka rights. I own the karka, but I granted you the trees, but that means the trees and their successors, their right to plant in that position. So in that way, everybody agrees the land ownership remains with the original seller. It's just a question of what rights were granted to the tree owner, or is it simply the trees that are there, or the trees plus their successors, meaning the ability to replant the trees if they died. So that's the way that the Ri learns this Gemara. All right, so now the Gemara continues and jumps on back to our Sugyot of Chazakot, and says, Amre Naradai. The Naradai say, Achlan Ritzufim, and no chazaka. Ritzufim means sequentially. So we've seen this before. Ritzufim before meant 3 years in a row. Over here, it doesn't refer to the years, but rather to the orchard that we were speaking about before. The beginning of this sugyo was a case where he had these 30 trees that were laid out over these tracts of land. And the trees in that case are too tightly packed over a period of time. And normally, when you start out, we know that you put saplings. You put 10 saplings in a Beit Sa'ah. Later on, when they're fully mature trees, you have 3 trees in a Beit Sa'ah. So what that means is, at some point, you have to take out some of the trees that are there. You have to be oker those trees. So Ritzufim over here means a case where the density of trees is too great for the area that they're in, which means that in the future, you're definitely going to have to take out some of these trees. So what the Naradai are saying is, for instance, the way that the Rishbam says, you have 15 in a Beit Sa'ah. You have 15 saplings in a Beit Sa'ah instead of 10. Which means, by definition, you're going to have to take out 5 of those trees. So then, even if you eat all the trees during the 3-year period, you do not have a chazaka, because you didn't utilize the land in the normal way that people utilize the land. That's what the Rishbam says. People normally only have 10 trees here. They don't have 15 trees here. So either because you're not using it in the normal way that people use it, or because you're establishing a chazaka through trees that are not going to exist in the end. They're going to be pulled out of here. So your chazaka is not really a chazaka, because the owner lets you take them or utilize them because he's not keeping them there. He's going to move them from this location. The fact that these trees are going to be uprooted means that they're only temporarily on the land. Their connection to the land is tenuous. And therefore, establishing a chazaka by utilizing or being engaged with these trees doesn't necessarily translate into a chazaka on the karka because of their tenuous connection. So therefore, your establishment of a chazaka on the land is not relevant, because the trees that you're using to establish the chazaka are not going to be there in the future. They're going to be pulled out. So for that reason, the Naradai believe that if you ate them in this manner, that you do not grant rights to the property. Matkif la Rova. Rova says, is that really true? El miata ha mishra da asaf sato b'may konile. When you have this area that is grown for the grass, the animal feed, the hay that is grown there, how are you konet? Again, here, it seems that they planted it in a very compact and tight manner. The Rashbam says right off the bat, Miolava kafta malyotohi. It's not a real question, because there's a difference. In the case of the trees, it's not normal to plant 15 trees in a beitzah. In the case of the grass, it is normal to plant with that type of density. And therefore, what's the question that Rava is asking? So there's a big difference between the case of the asafsata and the trees. First of all, the trees, for sure, you're going to pull them out. The asafsata, you're not going to necessarily pull it out. You're going to let it grow that way. Number two is the trees significantly weaken the land. So therefore, they have impact when they're too tightly packed and there are a lot of them there. Versus the asafsata, which is not such a degradation on the land in terms of its draw on the land. But he's just pointing out, Ravahu, delet lehai svara, miltabamu, the mukila le nardai. Basically, Rava doesn't think the nardai are right. So he's just asking them a generic question. He's asking them a question which doesn't really make sense. That's the first way the Rashbam explains it. And then he brings Vayesh lefaresh. He brings an alternative explanation, which is brought by other Rishonim, which is that they planted asafsata in the same way that they planted trees. Which is that they planted trees in a high density, and then afterwards they would uproot the trees and replant them in other places. And same is true about the asafsata. And he points out here, like they do with krishin leeks and kruv and cabbage, they plant them originally in a very tight manner, and then later on they pull them out. Like in a nursery, you go to the nursery, they plant them in a very tight quarters, but then you have to take them out and plant them in the ground at proper spacing. So it's the same thing over here, and that's Rava's question. By asafsata, we said before, you're able to establish a chazaka if you use it for the period of time that the asafsata grows, whether it's the 3 years or the 3 cycles of harvests, you are able to establish a chazaka even though they're tightly packed. Whereas by the trees, you're saying you can't establish a chazaka when they're tightly packed. What's the difference between them? So that's the nature of Rava's question. According to that second explanation, the Rashbam, the question is a real question. It's not just a toss-out question to undermine their position because he doesn't believe in it, but it's a fundamental question as to why there's a difference between these two cases. There is a third view in the Rishonim that the question is that by a safsato, even though it's normal to grow it in that way, like the Rashbam said before, so the reason it's normal to grow it that way is because you pull it out every 30 days. You cut it every 30 days, like you cut your grass on a regular basis. The density of the grass is allowed by the fact that you're cutting it all the time. If that's the case, that's why you're able to establish a chazaka over there. By the ilanot, why can't you say the same thing? The reason that you should be able to establish a chazaka is because, yes, you're going to take them out, and that's a normal thing to do, but the asafsata is so too. When you cut it, we allowed you to establish a chazaka, even though the density required that you cut it. So to over here, even though the density requires that you uproot it, you should still be able to create a chazaka. Because of that dissonance, Rava says, I think this din is wrong. Elam Rava, machran mitzufim, ein lo karka. If he sells them in such a manner, you don't get the land that is associated with them. Which means that you can establish a chazaka on the trees, what you can't do is establish a chazaka on the land. So the trees, because they're made to be nekar, since they are made to be uprooted, therefore if someone sells you these trees, it's clearly selling you the trees without the land. Because the trees have to be moved. They're not going to stay in this position. So you can't argue that he sold you the trees with the land, because the trees themselves don't even belong on the land. They're going to be pulled out of this land anyway. They're going to have to be uprooted. Right. But the fact that you have to root some of them indicates already that he's selling you, when he said, I sold you the trees, that's all he sold you. You sold the trees without the land, because the nature of this setup is going to demand that a good part of these trees are going to be uprooted. And that's indicative of the fact that trees here are separate from the land. They're not necessarily connected directly to the land. So for that reason, it's not called a stay ilan. And therefore, the mindset of a seller is to sell the trees and not to sell the karka. Arav Zera, that statement of Rava is kitanae, is actually a machloket tanaim. Kerem shenutua al pachot mi'arba amot. If you have a vineyard that is planted in rows that do not have the requisite 4 amot between them. A normal vineyard has 4 amot between the rows of the vineyard. If you have less than that space between the rows of the vineyard, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Eino Kerem. It's not classified as a vineyard. Chamim Arim, Harizo Kerem. It is a vineyard. Bro'im et emzeim kilo einam. And we look at the middle ones as if they're not there. So for instance, if there were two amot between every row, every other one you would say is as if it's not there, and therefore you have the requisite four amot between the rows, just pulling out the row that's in between them. So now, what's the relevance of whether it's designated as a kerem or not? The way that the Rashbam says it, she'ein ben shura l'shura l'gimel amot, eino kerem, v'amiv zera l'sham eino loke. If you plant grain there, it's not considered to be kilei hakerem, because kilei hakerem only applies when you have a kerem. So over here, you don't have a kerem, therefore when you bring it in closer proximity, or you plant between the rows of the kerem, that's not considered to be kilei hakerem. The Bali HaTosafot add over here, ve'ein tzarich l'archik zera dalet amot, ela shlosha tfachim. You don't have to leave four amot between the grains that you planted and the vineyard. You can plant them three tefachim apart, which is the normal spacing for different species. In addition to that, we know that the halacha in Sefer Devarim is that someone who goes out to war, one of the individuals that's let come back from war, is a person who planted a kerem velo chilulo, and he didn't have a chance yet to bring up the produce in the fourth year, the netta revai, up to Yerushalayim. That's only if he planted a kerem. It's not classified as a kerem, he doesn't have a right to come back from the battle. So that's the din, according to Rabbi Shimon, is that when you're planted in too tight a density, you lose the status of kerem. We don't say, oh yeah, he'll pull out some of them and then it'll become a kerem in the end. You lose the status of kerem completely. On the other hand, the Chachamim say, like you were suggesting, that the Chachamim say, okay, you're right, it's overplanted, it's too dense. So there is a kerem here, it's just a kerem with things that need to be removed. Once you remove those items, it will gain the status of a kerem, or, in essence, it has a status of kerem now, you just know you're going to have to take out things that are in between them. And therefore, that would have impact on what Rava is saying. Rava's statement is only true, really, according to Rabbi Shimon. Just like Rabbi Shimon says, when you're too dense, it's not called a kerem, so too by a steilan, it's not called a steilan when it's too dense. The Chachamim will say that it's a kerem, you just got, and eventually you'll have to get rid of this stuff, or we ignore the things in between. So too by the trees. You just ignore the excess trees. The trees that belong there will establish that it is a steilan. So given that, you have here a machloket tanaim about the position of Rava, or basically Rava's position is following that of Rabbi Shimon. So now, the Gemara continues with another statement of the Naradai. So Amrei Naradai, you see that the Naradai here play an important role in them, make other statements before. Maybe we had them back on Lamed Hey Omid Bet, Amri Naradai. In Ba'achad Min Ashuk Ve'Egzik Bezeh In Motzino Tomi Yado. The Tanya Rabbi Chia Gazlan Shirabim Lav Shmei Gazlan. So we had the Naradai opine on that statement of Rabbi Chia back on Lamed Hey Omid Bet. We just had the Naradai speaking about Achlan Ritzufim In Lo Chazaka. In both cases, they were rejected. In the case on Lamed Hey Omid Bet, Rav Ashi rejected the position of the Naradai. Over here, Rova rejects the position of the Naradai. And now we have another statement from the Naradai, which is Amrei Naradai. Haiman dezovin dikla lechavre, kanile mishipulei adeoma. An individual sells a palm tree to his friend. The individual is koneh the property below the tree at the size of the base of the tree. The ground rights or the root rights below it. That's the way that the Rashbam explains it over here. The Kevan di Ilan leperutav kone, since he buys the tree to sustain the fruits, leitkayem mikarkozo, to live off this land, gamim yumota ilan itayar charbid komo. Number one is, he gets the land rights to plant a new tree there. Vashmina nami, dein balasadeh yachol achpor takara ilan. In addition to that, you don't have a right to dig under my tree, avil lamata me'elef ama, even 1,000 amot down. In that the ownership rights of the land are all the way down to the bottom. Same way like today, if you have land rights, then you get it all the way down. If someone digs for oil under your property, even if they drill into it from the side, you still have rights to the oil because it's beneath your property. So over here, you have a right to block anybody going underneath your tree. And the Rashbam says you have a right to replant the tree. On the other hand, Benir the Ri says that he doesn't agree with that. The rights that you're granted over here are simply not to dig under your tree, that you can block him from doing that. But you don't get a right to replant the tree over here. The Rashbam says you get two rights. One right is to plant the tree again, if it dies. Number two is you have rights to block him from going underneath your tree. The Ri says he doesn't believe that's true. He thinks that you get no rights to replant your tree because of the Gemara later on. It says when you buy one tree or two trees, you don't get karka. When you buy three, you get karka. So over here too, when you buy one tree, you don't get karka. Ah, so what are the Naradai speaking about? They're speaking about as long as your tree's there, you have a right to block someone from going underneath the property. The Rabbeinu Gershom over here gives some logic to what the karka is that you get. The Rabbeinu Gershom says that if we granted you the tree rights underneath the foliage of the tree, underneath the branches of the tree, that'd be too wide a swath of land to grant you. You don't need all that land for the sustenance of the tree, and therefore we're not going to give you the land under it, that is the width of the shade of the tree. The Rabbeinu Gershom says, that's too wide. If we only gave you the size of the trunk of the tree, that'd be too narrow. So what they give you is the shipulei of the dekel. If you ever look at a palm tree, the palm trees are very wide at their base. They narrow as they go up, and then again, the leaves spread at the top. So he says, if you did it by the width of the leaves, that'd be too much. If you did it based on the trunk that's up higher, it'd be too little. So we do it based on the shipulei, that wider base of the palm tree. That's the area of land that we give you that was sufficient to sustain the tree and keep the tree in good stead. So that's how the Rabbeinu Gershom explains the logic. Matkiflo Rava, once again here, we have Rava challenging the position of the Naradai. Velei Malei, Kurkuma Derishka Zvinilach, Akor Kurkuma Derishka Vizil. Why can't he say to him, I sold you the Kurkuma Derishka, which is saffron, expensive crop that lasts there for some number of years, and then you gotta pull it out, and that's it. Others translate Karkom as crocus or turmeric. So, it's one of these spices, although it probably leans more heavily towards saffron because the Gemara in a number of places says that it's an extremely expensive cash crop, which is more characteristic of saffron, which is an extremely expensive spice. The Rashbam over here calls it Krug Oriental, this crocus or saffron that comes from the Orient or that was grown in the gardens and not something that was picked out of the wild. So why can't he say the same thing with regards to this tree? He says, I granted you the rights to plant here, but I didn't grant you rights that are going to be residual rights. The way that the Rashbam is learning it, I didn't grant you rights to replant the tree. I granted you the rights for the tree to be there as long as it's around. Once the tree's gone, you don't have a right to plant something in its stead. Just like when the Kurkuma Derishka, if I sold you that area, I would tell you to take it out. And then when it's done, take it out and you're done. You're out of here. So it's over here with the tree. Once you're done, you're out of here. You don't have any residual rights in the property. Now, that runs into a problem for the Ri. The Ri here has said that he didn't even think the Naradai believed you had rights to replant the tree. Then what's Rava's question here on the Naradai? What does that mean, me Kurkuma Derishka? He says, well, Marie, sold you the rights to the Kurkuma Derishka that grows on the property. I didn't sell you the rights to the property itself and that which is below the property. I sold you simply the benefit of the item that is there until it's fully mature or ripened, and then you got to take it out. And the same thing with the tree over here. Ella Amarova Beba Machmatana. It's a case where you're coming with a claim. The person says that not only did you sell me the tree, you also sold me the land that was beneath the tree. And I don't have a shkar to demonstrate that when you sold me the tree, you also sold me the land underneath it. So what the person says is, I had a shtar that said you sold me the tree and the land. So now he comes to show me the shtar. He says, I don't have the shtar. It's more than 3 years. My tree's been standing here for 3 years. I lost the shtar. I don't have it anymore. What Rava says is that chazoka works to grant them the right of the tree and the land beneath the tree. So that's what this is talking about. Again, what we have here is the Naradai taking a statement about something and misapplying it. That's what happened back on Lamed Hei Amud Bet with Rav Ashi. They misunderstood Rabbi Chiya's position. And both times here, Rava says that they misunderstood about the issue of Ritzufim. And now they also misunderstood about this issue of Mishipulo at Tehuma. It's not that you get a right when you buy a tree to the land beneath it. It's simply that if you buy the land with the tree, you're making that claim that you got both of them. You can establish a chazaka by your tree being there that the land also belongs to you. So Gemara says, Amalei Markshisha Breder of Chisler of Ashi, Vi Kurkuma Derishka Zavinlei, Ma'avilei the Meivad. So then, wait a minute. If the real way that he sold it to him was he sold him the tree without residual rights in the karka, What is he to do? A tree lasts there for 3 years. The Baal HaTosaf will point out that it specifically mentions Kukuma Derishka because it was normal to leave it in the ground for 3 years and then to pick it. Given that, you would establish a chazaka with those 3 years, and that's why this whole sugya is framed around Kukuma Derishka, because it presents the same problem that you have with the Ilan, which is that you're going to be there for enough time to establish a chazaka. How do you prevent the individual from creating that chazaka when the only point of granting him the right was to take that which is here out and not to take possession of the property that was beneath it? So if he sold it like Kukuma Derishka, the way that he expressed it, which means that he sold it in a manner where you don't have residual land rights, how does he block him from establishing a chazaka over here? See, by Leila Mechuye, he should object. Within the first 3 years, he has to stand up and declare to a deem or to Beit Din or have a contract signed saying that you don't have rights to the land. You only have rights to the tree here, not rights to the land. What's interesting over here is that the Rishbam says, B'toch kol shalosh. Within every 3 years, he has to object. If you look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he just says, B'toch gimel shanim, just in the first 3 years. So it's a question whether you have to object just the first 3 years, or you have to continuously object. Every 3 years, you have to make an objection. But you argue is, when he objects, the individual now is on warning to keep his shtar. How long does that warning last? Once you give him a warning, is that a permanent warning that someone's contesting your ownership here? So you better keep the shtar forever, because he claims you have no rights to the land. Doesn't matter how much time it lapses after he's objected. Or do you say that every 3 years brings a reset to that objection, and now you have to re-enter and object again? Dilo tema achi, because if you don't say this goes back to the Gemara we saw back on Lamed Hei Amud Bet. Hani mashkanta de sura. This mashkon of sura, which is a way that you got land as collateral, and then you use that land to defease the loan by taking it for a fixed number of years, and each year would equal an equal reduction in the loan, despite the fact that the production of the land didn't necessarily equal the reduction in the loan amount. We said it's not to rebeat. The Chachamim established this mechanism because you took risk on the production of the field. It could be zero, or it could be double. That's equity risk. That's not called rebeat, and therefore it was permitted. But this is an institution of the Chachamim. How could the Chachamim institute something like that? When these years expire, that the property returned to the original owner, the debtor, without any payment. If the creditor rips up or hides the shtar mashkon over here, he could just say, I bought it. And he's been there for 3 years uncontested. He could say, Lukucha yibiyadi, and keep the land. Hachanami de mehemin? You're going to believe him in that case? Mitakne rabbon and milta dati b'dele pseido? Chamim instituted a mechanism for collateral and loan payment that's going to result in him losing all the land? They want to institute something like that. Over there, he needs to object, meaning that the debtor, within the first year years, has to make it clear that this is a mashkon, and therefore that would preserve his rights in the land, and the other guy can't come now and say, I don't have a shtar, because he was on warning that he needed a shtar. So to over here, he has to object to the ownership of the land that would become along with the tree. He has to say, I sold you the tree without any residual land rights. And that's what we're speaking about here. That Rava says, when you come with the Tana and you say, I bought the land and the tree, you're going to get the land with the tree because you made a claim and you have a chazaka. The only way to prevent that is if the owner didn't sell him the land, he has to object within the first 3 years and say, I only sold him the tree. I gave him no residual rights in the property. And that's what we said back on Lamed Hei Amud Bet. Just like over here, we said, you have to object. So too over there, we said that when he loads the payroll onto him, or he makes him naris in the property, he has to object to his taking ownership over the property and demonstrate that he only gave him rights to the fruits and not rights to the land. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah on Lamed Chet, Amud Aleph.